Welcome, everybody, to episode 311 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. I got the year right this time. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby. Hi. And hope everybody out there had a fun, festive, fulfilling Easter Sunday, which also happened to be April 1st. So it was like International Stay Off the Internet Day, even though it was Sunday. Did you come across any tech April Fool's jokes that were memorable to you, or did you just stay off the internet?
I mostly stayed off. I liked Elon's thing with being bankrupt. I liked how Cloudflare launched the 1111 DNS when it wasn't actually a joke.
Right.
Stuff like that I thought was funny. But that was it.
Yeah, so that Cloudflare DNS, so it's 1.1.1.1, and it's a private DNS lookup tool. Supposedly, it's blown off the charts in terms of performance from what I've read. They're still working on some things with it, but I mean, who has the bright idea to launch anything on April 1st? It just doesn't make any sense, but they did.
They did. I think the CEO tweeted that it was like his idea I saw.
Have you used it? I remember back in the day of open DNS used to be the big deal. I don't even know what I'm using as my DNS. It's probably just a default ISP again. So maybe I'll give this a shot.
When I got Eero at home, they have, I used to have a pie hole. Do you remember me telling you about that? The like DNS server that you can run on a Raspberry Pi that
I thought that's what your voice came out of.
That's a good one. No, it's a open source project that runs on a Raspberry Pi. That Pi hole. And since I got Eero, they have a subscription service that you pay $100 a year for, where you get one password and I forget what else, something else, but they outsource. They have a third party company where they'll, in beta sort of have a cloud based pie hole. So it blocks ads for your network through a custom DNS setting, can't use like Google DNS or Cloudflare DNS with it. So I won't really be able to use it, which is kind of a bummer. But it looked cool.
Yeah, so I'm out. I might give it a shot.
I think I usually use Google's DNS as my resolvers on servers and stuff that I would set up previously. So I wonder if there's benefit to switching off of that and using theirs. It'll be interesting to see how many people start to use that and then benchmark their droplets or Linodes or whatever else, like what the outcome is of switching up resolvers. I don't know. There's a lot to do.
So we got plenty of stuff to talk about today. But first I want to start off with a bit of feedback we received. This is a comment on episode 309, All Amped Up, where I had Alberto Medina on and Weston Reuter, and we talked all about the AMP project.
The feedback will be, we're so happy John wasn't on that episode.
Well, not quite. That wasn't quite the feedback. But Michael McGlynn posted a comment, and he says, I'm really disappointed in the episode. Alberto's contention that without AMP, the web would go away was ridiculous and required a challenge. In fact, I heard nothing that would dissuade me from believing that AMP is short-lived proprietary technology that serves only Google interest. Jeff's example of a local news site was an AMPed one because those sites are some of the worst examples of bloated content on mobile devices. They are also entirely profit-driven and a dying industry, and in fact, the least likely to adopt AMP, a perfect counterexample to the rosy picture of community involvement painted by Alberto. That was his comment. So,
wow, yeah, basically calling it like he sees it. And I have a feeling he's probably not alone in feeling that way. But the post that you linked me to earlier today really more deeply addresses a lot of those concerns. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so Casper Hubinger, He listens to the show. He actually listened to our interview and said it was great. And it was and he kind of has the same thoughts on interviews that I have, where it's great to actually hear people explain and talk about, you know, what's going on behind the scenes and kind of get their, you can hear the emotion and hear their perspective on things instead of just through text. But I hope I get your name right, Casper. I'll just call you Casper. It's a lot easier to say. But you might know him as Gluick Press. But on GluickPress.com, that's his website, he published an article called AMP and WordPress Will Scale Performance on the Web for Millions of Users, Hate It or Love It.
It's a great post. It's worth reading.
Articulate, well-thought-out article where he explains basically his journey of disliking AMP and everything about it, but coming to the realization that the reason it exists is because the general populace of web developers, have created the situation where AMP is necessary. It is needed.
Right.
And he, even though he did not like that situation, he came pretty much to the conclusion that AMP was a necessity that's needed for the simple fact that we've created these websites, and he has an extensive background. I believe it's 5 years in the customer support industry with WordPress. And he sees that with WordPress themes and all the plugins that are added on, that websites are being created by people who either don't know or don't have the technical chops, don't have the skills to think about all of those people on maybe 2G devices or on low bandwidth situations. And we're developing a web as if there's no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it's a great articulate post. I encourage everyone to read it. But some of the things that I'll pick out from his article, he says, those who criticize AMP the most usually are the least affected by the problems it aims to solve. I thought that was a poignant comment he made. Mm-hmm. And he also said that, he says near the end of the article, says, I thought I hated AMP. I now realize that what I hated was the fact that a thing like AMP has become necessary. And then like you, probably have contributed to its becoming a necessity. And he says, I'm cautiously trying to embrace the fact AMP exists and continues to make its way into WordPress. It still hurts, like any tube being forced down one's throat. I hope sucking it up will really save our lives on the open web. But it's really, in some of the comments, of course, were very well received on his article. Mm-hmm. And we'll have it linked up to in the show notes.
And there's some commentary on the bottom of which, right? Like Weston chimed in and others. So it's like a good think piece about AMP, kind of front to back, and well illustrated. Also, it's kind of like a really beautiful, well thought out post. So
and within the comments, Casper was responding to somebody, and he said something that that I thought was pretty interesting. I didn't think about that, and I wanted to get your take on this. He says he goes so far as to speculate that perhaps we're witnessing something similar to the rise of jQuery years ago, where today many developers prefer to write plain JavaScript over jQuery, which usually reduces overhead and improves performance. However, a few years ago, jQuery was everywhere. And he says, for many WordPress theme developers, it was the gateway to achieve a rich user experience with a lower learning curve than if they would have used plain JavaScript. So similarly, perhaps AMP could function as a gateway to performance these days, until in a few years, maybe developers will have caught up and prefer to write plain HTML, CSS, and JavaScript again. He says only time will tell.
Yep, I think he's right. I think putting it that way is a useful argument. Like, it really flips a lot of people's perspectives around. Like, the yin and yang of like what you need and why you need it is interesting. Like, he sort of summed it up as similarly to the way that we've talked about it before, where clearly it addresses a problem. AMP has, they have identified a problem and they are doing their best to address that problem. It is the fact that it is necessary is the part of it that I think is problematic. And so I agree. I do agree with that. There were purists that didn't like jQuery I find jQuery pretty refreshing these days. Like getting to dip in and just write one line of jQuery to do something is kind of way nicer than writing a bunch of React to do what used to be pretty simple. And so it the prevalency of AMP, once it is out in the world and more widespread, we'll start to see 5 years from now a different web. The one thing that he said that I thought was a really clever twist that I don't think that I had heard anyone really argue the point of, and then I guess we can move on, is he talked about how since AMP pages are predictable in size and sort of page response time and everything else, that it goes back, it harkens back to kind of the old school days of helping internet service providers or cellular carriers or people around the world better anticipate the bandwidth that mobile devices will use on a bigger, broader scale.
One of the examples he uses is WhatsApp, where he says mm-hmm. WhatsApp's constrained format makes it super convenient for mobile operators in many African countries to predict how much data a person will consume over the course of a week.
And that by itself is an interesting and obvious twist that I don't think that I've heard anybody really consider. That is one of the primary reasons to have a very specific mobile experience is to obviously trim out the fat and make it speedy and reduce the overhead and all those things. But by having it be a uniform format, suddenly enables all sorts of folks to better understand what 30% of the WordPress web and others really are going to use, which has kind of different, oddly vast economic benefits for ISPs, for hosting companies, and so on. And in that way, I think it's it provides all these little answers to questions that we haven't really been talking about asking yet.
Again, really, really, really well put together post. And like I said, we'll have it linked up to in the show notes. There was a WordPress release that happened. 4.9.5 was released the other day. It's a maintenance and security release. So there's a couple of security issues that affect WordPress 4.9.4 and earlier versions. There's at least three security hardening changes that have been made in 4.9.5 where localhost is no longer treated as the same host by default. Safe redirects are used when redirecting the login page if SSL is forced, and version strings are correctly escaped for use in generator tags. What all that stuff means, I have no idea, but it's security hardening fixes. It's good stuff. In addition, 25 bugs were fixed in this release, including improved compatibility with PHP 7.2, previous styles on caption shortcodes are restored, and like we've already covered, clear error messages. You can see a full list of changes along with their associated track tickets and the link we will provide in the show notes. One thing missing from WordPress 4.9.5 was the, I don't know if I want to call it controversial, but the Try Gutenberg prompt, which we've talked about. The Try Gutenberg prompt has been pushed back to a later release. Gary Pendergast made a comment on our post when we wrote about it on WP Tavern saying that there's been a change of plans. There's a couple of things that they want to fix up before the call out actually happens. He believes that there may be, it may make it into 4.9.6. It hasn't been confirmed. It might make it into 4.9.7. It's got to come out before 5.0 because that's the expected release that Gutenberg will be shipped in. So what this has done is this delay has extended the ability, the time for a conversation to take place in the track ticket about what the call out is trying to achieve and the wording of the call out and some of the ideas expressed in there. Chris Lemma, for the first time in 13 years, he responded, submitted his feedback on the track ticket, and he actually recommended. And he created this prototype of what the call out should look like. And it's got three different, it says he's got these different headings and these different columns. And I like it because it uses wording it's declaring up front to the user about what they're going to be doing and that it's beta software, but it doesn't do so in a way that it doesn't use scary language. Yep. It actually kind of encourages people and it makes it, it's up front versus the call out that's in WordPress now, which, you know, that was my main concerns. That was one of my main gripes is it's not up front about, hey, this is beta software and this could have adverse effects on your site. That the current call out just says, hey, want to be one of the first to try the editor? And then boom, within two clicks, you have it installed and activated. And that's about it. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's also some, one of the suggestions I read was from Daniel Bachhuber, who says maybe that instead of displaying the prompt to everyone, that maybe we should start with displaying it on a small percentage of WordPress sites. For example, maybe 10% to prevent an overload of users reporting already known issues or just inundating the support form to where you can't, mm-hmm. it's very hard to triage tickets and issues because you've got such a huge inflow of people reporting problems. So I thought that was a good suggestion. Mm-hmm. So who knows what's going to happen with the call out. It's going to happen eventually. But we don't know which version of WordPress it's going to be in. But I like the feedback. I like this. I hope the team considers this and implements a call out that looks similar to the prototype of Chris Lemma's, or at the very least has the kind of wording that his does.
I agree. I like that the conversation that happened, this was about 2 days ago, the conversation that happened between Chris and Mel on this track ticket was really nice to see because it is a good example of like someone has an idea. They include a screenshot of their idea. They kind of walk through some very low level thoughts. And then someone asks for more information. And then you dip right in and you provide all of that kind of a breakdown of what every single thought that you had was. Chris's in generally pretty clarity of thought is something that he kind of has all the time. And so it's not surprising, but it is just great to see this happening. And this is part of Chris's job, right? At this point, he's got where he works. He's got users at a hosting company that are going to be subjected to seeing this call out at some point. And so this is another one of those, companies that are contributing back, not only to help themselves, but to help the greater WordPress project. So it's like a good example of things all around.
And speaking of Gutenberg, so last week you got me onto a tangent about the user experience of Gutenberg. And I finally sat down and I published my thoughts on what it's been like to use Gutenberg for the past several months and the issues I'm having with various plugins. And it was pretty cool to get kind of a great response. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, look, there's Jeff keeping it real. because I had mentioned in the post, hey, if this version of Gutenberg was merged into WordPress today, it would be an absolute disaster because of the lack of plugin support. Is my mindset just based on some of the plugins I use that are not popular, that some of them are installed on 10,000 sites or less, and I rely on those and are very important to the publishing process. Right. Just imagine, I mean, there's almost 50,000 or so plugins that are on the plugin directory, and how many of those could be affected by Gutenberg? So I wrote up my experience and got a lot of great feedback. Even it was pretty cool. Even Matt left a comment saying, hey, thanks a lot for trying Gutenberg and providing this feedback. And I actually got in touch with a couple of members of the Gutenberg team who read the post, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, could you maybe walk us through some of the things that you experienced in this post? And because of that post, the Metabox issue that I was experiencing, a member of the core Gutenberg team looked into it and discovered some weird situations or configurations that were involved with the Metabox issue that they've since fixed. So it should be addressed in the next version of Gutenberg. And as far as the tags are concerned, how some of them disappear, it looks like there's an issue with that may be related to pagination on tags on websites that have like more than 500 tags or just have a lot of tags. Mm-hmm. And it may have something to do with cache or page results or something to that effect. Something technical that I don't understand. I just know that my tags sometimes disappear. But the team is aware of that issue, and they're looking into that. In fact, I believe one of the Make Core websites actually experiences the same issue with tags. So that was kind of cool to hear. And I actually saw some screenshots on Twitter from the lead developer of the Publish Link Preview plugin, I believe it's called. And he's playing around now with the sidebar Metabox API that's in Gutenberg. And his screenshot showed off the ability to not only generate a link, but he even had a UI to where you could set the day and time that you could make those links expire, which is already better than what he currently has, what the current version has in the current version of WordPress. So there are it was great that – and I received some flack for writing publishing that experience. The first comment was like, hey – I don't see any reporting here. All I see is your experience. I haven't written about my experience in Gutenberg for the longest time because I've been trying it out, so I finally decided to do it. And I think we need as many users as possible to write about their experience in Gutenberg, to write about the issues they're having with plugins. The more information, the better. The easier it is to see pain points people are having, and those things could be redirected into actionable items, whether that's a pull request or whether that's getting in touch with a plugin developer. Everybody should be writing about their experience with Gutenberg if you're able to. In fact, John, you are not part of the Gutenberg Experience Club because you published a post. Like the best part of waking up is reading about your experience with Gutenberg at 5 minutes. Actually, I was just going to bed, but I read it before I went to bed.
That's funny. It was my experience was the same as yours, but nobody comments on my blog because I have all that stuff turned off. But in my experience was similar to yours, I think. Carrie had wanted Gutenberg active on her blog for a while, and so I procrastinated, and I never really got around to doing it until this past weekend.
Well, all you got to do is install and activate a plugin. You couldn't even do that.
Well, I went through the process of like, well, let me pull it down from GitHub and let's see how long that it's been from the last release until what's changed on GitHub and see if it's worth running it from there or the plugin itself from plugins.wordpress.org. And then because I use Safari as like my primary casual browser because it's easy from an iPhone and everything else that I noticed that Gutenberg was like, it would flash, like the whole screen would turn white when you would visit the add new page. You'd hit add new and then you'd get this like full second of white screen and then WP admin and all the styling and stuff would show up. And so that happened on mobile and it happened on desktop. And so I was like, oh, well, I wonder why that flash would happen. And instinctively, I went to go look and see like how big is this page? Like, why is it taking so long?
Oh, I know where this is going.
And then, I wasn't going to go anywhere with it, but I look and I say, okay, well, there's a lot that it's still chugging through, and so I had ScriptDebug on in the first place. Because it's like my local development site that I pulled it down into. And I look at the difference between a regular admin page and like the Gutenberg page and think like, wow, that's a huge difference just out of the gate. Like, pull it down, build Gutenberg. Why is this taking so long? And then that was when I tweeted, you know, like, here's my initial upfront difference that went its own direction on Twitter. But then I, doing a little bit more digging, Firefox doesn't flash and Chrome doesn't do the flash. But every single one of them seems to have a different number of megabytes of page size or kilobytes, depending on. And then they have different requests that are pulling down like different scripts. And so I was like, okay, well, I don't have time to do this. All I wanted to do was activate Gutenberg on my own blog. And I instead like started opening the hood and looking at stuff. And so,
because that's what you do.
That is, well, yeah, but that's the point, I think, to your comment, your feedback that you had on your post. Like, your post on your blog was, here is my experience using Gutenberg. And then the feedback is, you didn't do enough. and sometimes, like, a chef just wants to go to McDonald's, right? Like, sometimes you don't want to do the like 50 other things that it takes to like make your own dinner and then clean up the kitchen. Sometimes you just want to share what you see. And so when that was your comment, I thought you responded to that comment really well. And sometimes that's what I do too, is like, oh, well, I installed this and this is what I see. And I guess that's not smart, right? Like, I think we're at a point where people do expect for us to go the extra mile, and that it's not clear when we don't. Like, if I don't go the extra mile, it's because I chose not to. Because you go the extra mile a million other times during the day, just like you do with everything. So, I think you just have a responsibility to people that know you or that are following you to say, like, I'm lazy, then I'm not doing the extra work with this post, or I'm not going into GitHub and finding the issue and looking for dupes or pinging a core developer or whatever else, right? Bothering a friend at 4 a.m. for them. Instead, you just, I got this far, I don't know, and that's it. And maybe that's dumb to even bother doing in the first place, but your post, I felt like, made it pretty clear, like, this is my first time using it. And that was my first time using it when I wrote that post too. And I had the same problem with like aligning images that you had. I thought it was weird how you can convert blocks, but you can't convert every block to everything. So like, you can make an image a header, but you can't make a header an image. And then if you make an image a header, the image goes away, but you don't know where. There's like all these little like, well, But then I sort of assume like, well, I can't be the first person to notice these things. Like, these things have to be obvious, because this is obvious to anyone who uses it, that like it's not clear. But then once you start using it, kind of like what your post was, if every click you take is like, oh, that seems weird, and then that seems weird, and then that seems weird, when you're done, you have created 20 GitHub issues without having even contributed to patching them or creating a movie for other people to see, to walk through what you did. And if the expectation is that we're going to own the bugs we find, this looks weird. And the expectation for us is you have to fix it, or you have to own it, or you have to write 8 paragraphs to tell everyone what your experience is and own the issue and have 20 pieces of dialogue for every little quirk you find. Sometimes it's just easier not to do that.
Yeah.
Because it you've created too much work for yourself by having an opinion or some opinions on the thing that you're using.
And then when you get that far, some people just say, oh, the hell with this, I'm disabling the plugin. Classic editor for the win.
Well, right. Because all that we're doing is spending 5 minutes using it, there are hundreds of people that are already spending more than 5 minutes using it. Why do you have to be the one to open all these bug reports? I guess like anyone could open those bug reports, and how are you the only person that sees them? I guess is what I find is like an interesting user study. Like, they've done official user testing with Gutenberg. Their users are using it already, and the majority of the user feedback that it seems like people have is kind of confusion. Why do you have to be the one to point at every confusing piece when you're
open, it's open source, John. Okay, this is the way it works. you find it, you own it, and fix
it. You're the open source of the problem, Jeff.
No, hold on a second. Just for our listeners out there, off the air, I came up with that first. He just stole it.
You did.
I want to sue you for intellectual property.
You can have all of the nothing that I have. You are welcome to it.
All right, so Jetpack 6.0, it's a big release, a major version. This is an interesting release because it is the first steps towards Jetpack building in privacy controls and GDPR compliance. So in Jetpack 6.0, they've created a dedicated settings page where you can access all privacy-related documents, as well as an option to opt out of activity tracking if you wish to do so. And they say that these are the first changes that the team has made to help Jetpack fully comply with the GDPR, which actually takes effect next month, May 25th. So we're about a month away. Outside of those changes, there's some new social media icons widget. Something I thought was interesting. They've removed holiday snow from Jetpack and WordPress.com. I know some people will be cheering for that. They said that its removal will help them make Jetpack a more focused and robust product for small businesses. It's one of those features that probably small businesses are like, why the hell do you got this in this snow? What does this snow do? I'm like, get rid of this. Would you stop?
Do you remember the first time you saw that?
Yes.
Like raining snow on some website. It was cool.
I mean, it was cool. And then a few years later, I'm reading posts about how it causes epileptic seizures and other issues with snow falling on the screen. So there's that issue. Jetpack and WooCommerce, they've added support for improved tracking of add-to-cart event and Jetpack stats. They've enhanced the brute force attack prevention logic, which will help it block attacks more efficiently. And they've also improved the accessibility, performance, and efficiency of the dashboard. So there you have it. If you haven't upgraded yet, definitely upgrade to Jetpack 6.0. And I'm going to have to take a look at the privacy pages that they've created. I'm pretty interested to see everything that's listed there.
If I remember correctly, I saw Heather's feedback about it in Slack.
Already?
Already. And she thought it was good, but she had...
There could be more.
She had changes to move some things to make them more obvious and stuff like that. So... If Heather says it's good, but it could be better, that's pretty good, I think. They're on the right track. They're on the right track. Exactly right.
There's a code of conduct survey that's available. That it's being organized by the WordPress community team. And they've been working on this document. It's a community code of conduct. And the goal of the project is to examine the it's a community code of conduct, basically. So all these WordCamp events have codes of conduct where you're expected to behave a certain way. Don't be a jerk. Don't be an a-hole. You know, pretty common sense things like that. Mm-hmm. Now there's this project where it's a community code of conduct. So they want to sort of spread these ideals and values to other places than just WordCamp. So maybe WordPress Slack channel, for example, or other sort of official, semi-official WordPress events or places they could apply this to. So they have a survey out, and it'll help them examine the potential of expanding the community team's code of conduct for WordPress events to include other spaces. And survey is going to be open until April 13th. And so they're asking everybody, as many people as possible, to spread the word, to take the survey and help them identify where it seems the best place would be to maybe apply this community code of conduct. And I'll tell you one thing right now. I've already had a couple people say that, you know, perhaps the comment policy in WP Tavern or perhaps the tavern could do with implementing or abiding by this code of conduct survey because it's a community site. And I don't like the idea of that at all. I don't like the idea of being dictated on how I have to do things based on a community code of conduct document that I have no control over.
Sure.
And
yeah, right.
That's the way I feel about it. And expanding the code of conduct to other events, I don't know how I have mixed feelings about that. It in one way, it's like trying to extend your reach and your influence to places that maybe would be better off not having that. But then again, having a code of conduct that encompasses all these things under the WordPress umbrella, maybe that's not too bad. Maybe it's just another way to battle against toxic people that are in the community. Right. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. I think like every individual group, it's like, it's important to have a blanket code of conduct that is generally all encompassing. And I think the WordPress community has always been maybe better than most. I mean, certainly better
than
most.
Depends on who you ask.
I guess that's true. But I feel like certainly better than at least my experience with a lot of like in-person communities. But it's possible that in certain scenarios or other certain communities that those rules don't necessarily always apply. So I think you're right. Like at the Contributor Summit, usually we try to avoid taking photography almost in general, really. And so one of the things that that I learned about like government related things and ordinances in my limited experience so far is that most municipalities, most groups probably within the WordPress ecosystem, you can make things more strict, but you can't open them up bigger than like what the state allows. And so we could say where I live that the legal drinking age is 18 instead of 21. That the legal drinking age is like 23 or whatever. We can make it worse, but we can't make it better. We can make it so that we restrict it more, but we can't open it up more. I said that backwards because I was thinking about not saying it backwards and then said it backwards. And so like we can't say that the speed limit in town is 100 miles an hour because the state says the speed limit, the maximum speed limit is 35 miles an hour. But we can say we want to enforce that people go 25 instead. The global code of conduct should be a pretty global set of rules for all of the groups, for BuddyPress, BBPress, for GlotPress, for contributing in the forums, the Rosetta forums, everything, right? But then there are, because we're a global community, there are going to be times and areas and places where those rules just don't apply. They don't feel right, or they're not culturally relevant. And so it is important that whatever happens, that each individual group does feel like they have some flexibility and that it is clear what they can be flexible on. Because that's what makes running your own town or village or city important and nice, is that you get to decide things like how many liquor licenses you want or how many bars that you want in the area, and things like communities need to be able to decide, do we want this to work this way or are we okay with having it work that way? So I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm going to a city council meeting tonight, and the proposal is to ban people with JJJ for their name to being able enter my city or town. So
good.
I'm for having you in my town though. So I'm
in favor. I appreciate that. Thank you. we almost drove past and visited you because we were in Mansfield, so we could have driven through. I'm happy. What will probably happen is I'll be allowed there, but I won't be allowed to flap my pie hole.
That's right.
I'll have to stay quiet.
And while you were here, we temporarily renamed the state Brohio.
Good.
There you go.
That's cute.
All right. Speaking of WordCamps, this is a pretty cool idea. It's actually official now. Drew James sort of floated the idea out there, and he's got the support from the WordPress community organization. And he says he put out the proposal last fall. Now there's going to be a WordCamp for organizers.
It's a super good idea.
During the beginning stages of planning for this new event, he says the goal is to create an opportunity for meetup and WordCamp organizers to share knowledge and experience with your peers in the community. If you're new to WordPress community organizing, this conference is for you. So what they're looking at doing is having a one-day event to be held in December in Nashville, maybe a day or two before WordCamp US. And potential sessions could include how to spread the word about your community events, tips for wrangling speakers, volunteers, sponsors, conflict resolution among organizing teams, how to respond to a code of conduct issue, finding and using official organizing tools and resources, and much more. He says that pretty much every WordCamp meetup organizer has built up a toolbox of tricks of the trade, and this conference is all about sharing that institutional knowledge with the wider WordPress organizing community. So I have a link to this post in the show notes, but they're asking for volunteers and organizers that can help out, maybe contribute 2 to 3 hours per week of volunteer time to contribute to this event. It already has quite a few comments on the post. And if you're planning on going to WordCamp US and this conference sounds like it'd be right up your alley, it gives you a reason to maybe show up to Nashville a couple of days early.
I like that Adam Warner asked the question to clarify that even though he's never organized a WordCamp but has attended many of them, like, is it still okay? Is this open registration? And it is, right?
And, like, and I think someone from that would offer a great perspective from someone that's attended many events, attended many WordCamps, but hasn't organized one. I think their feedback is just as valuable as the people who have organized them.
I agree. And I thought about this in the context of, like, I have helped organize and start WordCamps, but logistically, I'm rarely the person who, like, is getting the hard stuff done when it comes to scheduling and food and emailing and all the, like, wrangling of the entire event. There are so many volunteers and roles and contributors and people that all that it takes to make these events happen and get going that, it's about time. Drew has been talking about this a ton since the idea came about. What's up, Drew? It's cool to finally see this start happening.
Mm-hmm. A WordCamp for WordCamp organizers.
It's, yeah. You know.
There you go. So great to have the support there. That's going to do it for the list of topics I had on my agenda to talk about. You know, there is, in fact, if I can bring it up really quick, John, is there anything that you'd want to talk about before we wrap it up? Because if I could find it really quick, there is one more thing here.
I guess the only thing that I've got going on is just trying to figure out, like, upcoming WordCamps and things that are going on. They're kind of heavy on my mind because there's WordCamp Europe is closing in. WordCamp Grand Rapids I'll be at, and so that's coming up pretty quickly. Chicago eventually. And
yeah, Chicago's at the end of this month.
Mm-hmm. And so before you know it, we're, you know, month after month after month of events going on. So are you going anywhere, doing anything?
I've been thinking about Chicago, but I'm not going to go to Chicago this year. I mean, if I'm going to go to any WordCamp, it probably won't be until June, where it's WordCamp Kent, Ohio, pretty much in my backyard. And then after that, who knows? Maybe WordCamp US. Maybe I'll stay home because I don't like Nashville. But I'll watch the stream. Who knows?
You know, Nashville is... You need to take you out.
Okay.
All
right, here it is. So I thought this was interesting. You and me, we enjoy talking about forums, communities, software, stuff like that. So John O. Nolan, who created Ghost, Try Ghost.
That's right.
He wrote this tweet thread. He says, after 4 years of running a 11,000 member plus public Slack community for Try Ghost, he has decided to shut the whole thing down for good. And he shared a couple of observations that he wanted to share or from the experience. And I don't want to go through the entire thread, but he says that they seem to have been approaching, which some would argue, which as long as the past Slack team saturation, it's just not new or shiny anymore, where Slack was the, oh my God, this is so much better than before option. Just a few years ago, it has now become the, not another one thing.
Yeah, right.
And he shares some numbers about this. And then he talks about Slack community usefulness is inversely proportional to its size. The life cycle looks something like 100 people. Yay, we're all friends. 1,000 people. This is a cluster. You know what? And 10,000 people. Nobody's posting anymore because what is the point even? He says, once you hit a certain scale, things pretty much just fall apart and the format of group instant messaging starts to lose its value. We looked at all of the we made our own Slack, which is better competitors, and this problem hasn't been solved by anyone yet, in his opinion. So they've actually moved their community back to a forum, which is Discourse. I've been a longtime fan of what Discourse has been doing, and he says in the last few years, Discourse has become an absolute force to be reckoned with. It's nothing like an old school forum and a lot more like a custom community slash Reddit hybrid. It says it's very powerful and configurable for different needs. Hugely impressive. So I just thought, you know, pretty interesting. And Slack, I think, has, and this was brought up in the thread, that Slack has always made it known that their priority is for teams, companies, businesses, organizations. And really, I think less than a third or around a third of their teams that they have are community based,
right?
So we could see where the focus is there. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
We within the Sand Hills company, we have gone back and forth about the value of Slack. I think for WordPress, it works okay because there's so much going on, and everyone.
How many channels now are there for the WordPress Slack?
Hundreds.
That's where the comes.
It is, and it goes back to the thing that we've talked about before.
I guess it's better than the old silos. School.
Siloed communities. You have too many forums in too many places, or too many BuddyPress installs in too many places, and it's unmanageable for any one person. And so Slack did a good job of answering our needs with multiple channels, private channels amongst individual groups, and then being able to have multiple Slack networks in your Slack client, because originally you couldn't do that.
And being sort of the cool new thing that seemed to lower the barrier to entry.
It definitely did.
For those who just couldn't grasp IRC and the multiple clients you use to connect to servers.
And in that way, Slack did build amazing momentum and a really cool piece of software. We've killed it. Like, we killed it. We now used it to death, and we don't want to use it anymore. Like, every time someone says, come join our Slack network, John O'Nolan is 100% right. For the past 2 years, I basically said, ugh, crap. I'm not going to provide any value to this Slack network. I have 10 already. And so forums can sometimes feel a little selfish. And, I know that, before that I joined Sand Hills, that Pippin and everybody moved everything off of forums because it didn't fit their needs, anymore. They use Help Scout and other tools to do support and manage projects and everything else. And so, even though they really tried hard to build a ton of extensions for BBPress to customize it and make it work for what their needs were, it doesn't make sense for a small company to build all of their own tools that they can't later repurpose the way that Slack did. Slack was a thing they built for themselves that they repurposed and turned into their primary product. And so it doesn't surprise me that John and the folks at Ghost eventually reached kind of critical mass with the growth of their Slack community and said, like, this is unsustainable. and switched over to Discourse. Discourse is a super cool piece of software, and it wouldn't surprise me if
it's the next thing that we're all going to love to use and then not want to use it anymore.
Maybe, but it doesn't surprise me that, like, spiritually, John wouldn't pick BBPress and WordPress, because why, right? Like, it's easier to pick a similar technology stack to what it is that you're familiar with. And I think it's Discourse, I think, still uses Angular. I guess I don't know anymore, but it is cool, right? And it's hands-off, and it's a community that is self-sustaining again, where I don't think that Slack always feels as self-sustaining as forums do.
So John's initial tweet received a lot of retweets, a lot of likes, a lot of discussion, and he actually came back and responded to some of the most common criticisms/comments. And he says, for those who said, see, Slack is no better than IRC, John says, that's kind of like saying a car is no better than a horse, which is bull crap. A Mercedes is a lot better than a horse in every way, but neither of them can carry 10,000 people efficiently. Slack is better than IRC. And then he says another common theme was, see, I told you Slack wouldn't work, which he says is probably the most misguided of all. To outgrow Slack, first you have to grow at all. If we have never used Slack, then we might have never reached 11,000 community members. He says that is important. And just because something stops working doesn't mean it never worked. It means it was extremely effective to get you to where you are now, and now you need something bigger. So to the naysayers, when we started using Slack, sorry, but you were still wrong. It worked great. And he goes on to talk and respond to a couple of the other criticisms there. A great thread and just kind of some insight into, hey, you know, we reached a point where Slack no longer is the tool that does what we need it to do. And so
could you imagine everyone that's in the WordPress Slack channel, Slack network now, moving everything into the WordPress.org forums?
No.
It's just no way, right? No, Slack works well for the type of work that the WordPress community is doing right now. And I couldn't imagine that happening on a bunch of P2s. Right now, the process to me feels like it is about as good as it will get without there being some other new thing. There's summaries that happen on P2s. There's asynchronous stuff that happens on P2s. There is a lot of feedback that bubbles up from the forums. There's a lot of internal discussion that happens in Slack. An organization and development and security stuff that can't happen in a lot of other places. And then stuff bubbles up to P2s once there is like an announcement or some kind of to-do. It works well the way that the WordPress community does it, but it would be hard to do all that in forums alone.
And I like the fact that somebody on Hacker News submitted his thread as to Hacker News with the headline, Ghost, the open source Node.js blogging platform is shutting down. Which is, wow. you know.
April Fools, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you guys use for Tavern stuff? Do you just use a GroupMe or WhatsApp?
It's just Sarah and I. So we used to use Skype, but now we use Telegram.
Okay. Yeah.
So we use Telegram between us, and to communicate with me, Matt, and Sarah, and some other people, we use Slack. We have some group DMs going.
I see. Yep.
So we use that. I'm not on Slack as much as I used to, and it's been nice, and I don't open my inbox as much as I used to, which has been nice.
I deleted Facebook and Instagram a couple of weeks ago. Like, not the account.
Did you actually go through with it?
No, I deleted the apps is like step one, right? Like, let's not have any exposure to the apps or anything there at all. And that is nice. One, because it sort of removes the impulse to just kill time using it. But also, it's just not... I checked it, so like notifications were off and everything. And it's the same thing with Slack, I guess, is like... I have notifications turned off in Slack unless it is like a direct ping or a project I'm working on or BuddyPress, BBPress, Sugar Calendar, EDD, security stuff. Like there are like multi-site roles, things that I know that like I can kind of help with. But otherwise, everything else just goes to DevNull. It just goes like, I'll check it when I can. And I think like with Slack, everyone starts off like full bore. This is cool. I'm catching up. I'm reading. The endorphins are going. It's rewarding. It's fun. It's great. But John is 100% experiencing what I think a lot of other folks are experiencing is like, we can't keep up. There's just too much happening and we're tuning it out on purpose, which completely nullifies even using it in the first place. So I'm curious to circle back on Ghost using Discourse in like a year and see how much they like it. I assume, you know, it'll be great, but it'll be curious. I'm curious to see how they adapt.
Well, that's all I had on my plate for today. Unless you got something else, let's wrap this puppy up.
Nope.
I don't have any picks this week, so maybe we'll have.
I feel like Casper's Post is a good pick.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good. All right. So
everyone should be deleting their Facebook accounts, right? That's the thing that's happening now. Yeah. That would be the only other.
Cambridge Analytica. Let's all protest and delete our accounts.
Oof. Yeah, that's we could have a whole episode about that.
All right. So let's see here. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wbtavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffFR0, where the tweets are very
making fun of me.
Well, yeah. Sometimes very few and far between my tweets are lately. I don't know. It's just the way it is.
That's probably good. That's probably
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sitting here tweeting megabytes of page numbers and then dealing with all the hell that comes with it. So, I'm not. John is. But anyways, John, where can we follow you on Twitter so we can actually see when you tweet megabytes of pages?
Terrible. You're so mean to me. Why do I keep coming back every week?
Because you like opening that pile.
I do, I guess. Opening it enough for an hour at least. I like that now I'm uncomfortable after the podcast is like almost over.
Okay.
It's not at the beginning, it's at the end now. We've come full circle, I think. It's good.
We've come full pile. All right.
So I like that now you've got the giggles. Okay, this is like the first episode that we've had where you end in the giggles.
Okay. Wait, where can we find you? I mean, we say it in every show.
At JJJ. JJJ.blog. I think I'm going to stop. I think I'm going to tweet less. I think I said that in the beginning of the year. But, man, now that I've got Gutenberg activated and installed, now I can just start blogging again.
You could just do a tweet block and then have that tweet go right to Twitter or something. I don't
know. That's a better
idea. All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. I've got Ukrainian Easter to celebrate this Sunday, so cool. Ooh. I got two Easters, two in a row, so I'm
nice.
Looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the three-hour mass. Anyways, I'm looking forward to that. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, everybody.